This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Mark Kermode is here. We have some movies to discuss. And a couple of moments ago, Stephen Graham came running back in to the studio. I imagine you'd forgotten something.
I brought him back in specifically because of this. Now, I have this big thing, which is that you know, if you ever say anything on the air, you should say it to somebody's face. And Stephen was outside, and he said, I said, it's a pleasure to meet you. And he said, yes, despite the fact that you said that I was too overweight to play Billy Bremner.
Oh, yeah, well, that's
now,
true.
Now, I didn't say that.
No.
Did I?
No, I think there was a general conversation with Mr. Sheen in which aspersions were cast at the look of the Leeds United team as to whether they could actually be champions.
We embodied the spirits of the men.
You know, I just wanted to be absolutely clear that had thank I said you, such a thing, you. I would have
it
said
might have
it.
Been me.
So I would
probably
have said,
you then,
I would
wasn't
have said it to
it
your face.
Slippery.
And, you know, just because. But the only. I mean,
I think it was me talking to Michael Sheen.
I wouldn't know what the real Billy Bremner looked like if. As far as I know, Billy Bremner was the guitarist in Rockpile. He was, though. They were. Dave Edmonds' side guitarist was a guy called Billy Bremner. And funnily enough, you look nothing like him. So, it was a pleasure to meet you, and I never said you were fat.
Okay, thank you very much. I think, well, you did, though.
Well, I think it was more general than that.
Okay.
I think it was more generally expressed as to whether that team looked as though that they were the champions.
Well, it was about the relationship with the characters and him. It wasn't. We didn't have to look. All right, you could have got actors that play brilliant football, but couldn't act then, so... It's a happy medium.
It's a good film, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's all right. I'll let you off. I'll come back again. Yeah. I will do.
If you come back, could you come back as a gentle and loving character?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Do you think... I mean, final question, then, as you're back.
Okay.
Just having done Gangs of New York, as you mentioned, and you're doing Al Capone, having done Babyface Nelson, you and also the This Is England, which is going to carry on, are you kind of yearning? I mean, I know you said you're never going to be Mr. Darcy, but you're capable of a whole range of characters. We mentioned your vocal skills. You know, it's time for you to be, I don't know, do a comedy, do a kids'
film. You did Inkheart, didn't you?
Yeah, I did Inkheart. I was briefly in it. I was lucky enough to do an episode of The Street for Jimmy McGovern.
Fantastic.
And in that, you know, he was a totally different character. He was an alcoholic, and I like playing these characters because they're interesting. They're really interesting. But I would like to do
it. But your two kids, how old are they? Grace and Elfie?
Grace is 5 and Elfie's 3.
The work that you do there must be just a kind of a different world, because they're never going to say, come around, mates, from school no, and from exactly. nursery, come and see what my dad's doing.
I want to do CBeebies. I've been asking for ages to do CBeebies and read a story on CBeebies, like the old Jack and Audie, but no one seems to want to let me do it.
I'd pay to watch you do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'd be totally different, because I do like doing voices and stuff like that.
If this was 4 o'clock, we could go two floors down, along the corridor, turn right, that's where they are.
Yeah, into the night garden.
This is Stephen Graham.
And he's doing a story.
And he's
doing
a story. And if you don't, he's got a cricket bat.
Thank you very much. It was an absolute pleasure.
Stephen Graham, thank you.
Thank you very much.
So we kind of done the Men of Sterrett Coach.
Yes. And I think our general feeling was, you know,
it's good.
It's generally good. I mean, as I said, it's mainstream, but it made me laugh. I think it works as a comedy. It has enough of John Ronson in it to give it that widgety edge.
Christmas Carol will be discussed before 4 o'clock. Jennifer's Body, Bright Star, and we'll see where we go. Here come the box office top 10. First of all, Dead Man Running at 10.
Which I haven't seen because I was off. That's the Fiddy Scent movie.
It is. The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Still hanging on in there. And as I said before, I mean, I don't think it's Gilliam's best work, but I think as with all Gilliam stuff, there is stuff in there that is worth seeing. And I have advised people to see it twice because it is a different film the second time round.
Adam on this says, Dear Dr. Parnassus and Mr. Nick, I was at Hull in Screen 10 with you, but I was far too intimidated by the greatness of The Good Doctor to put my hand up. Overall, I did like the film and thought that the images presented in the film were great, and you could certainly tell it was a Gilliam film, which in my book is a very, very good thing. However, even with the great acting and Tom Waits,
I'm guessing you're not a betting man,
along with a brilliant idea which could only come from Gilliam's brain, I still felt there was something missing. The problem I felt was there was no weight behind the film at all, unlike Brazil and 12 Monkeys, and this detracted from the movie. I suspect it was something to do with the glossy CGI instead of the weighty physical effects in some of the other
films. Agree entirely. Weight, weight, is exactly what the problem is.
Well done. Education at number 8
again, now I was off, but you've seen, so you do it.
It's fantastic, but here's the thing. Don't get in the car. He looks like Ed Balls. Run away. Run away, child. For heaven's sake. It's going to be laden with awards. You have to see it. And that's an umbrella. And Mark will have seen it by this time next week.
I will, yeah. Well, it's either that or Nine. But Nine is... So which of the two do I need to go and see? An Education.
But I haven't seen Nine, which
But everyone says that An Education is... And the lead actress, whose name is...
Carey Mulligan,
who you met, in fact.
She's terrific.
She's great. Okay,
no,
so
I
I'm good.
I didn't meet her, but I was supposed to.
Okay, but
she
stood you up.
Filming.
Okay, fine. Now I don't like her.
Nine's at 7. Couples Retreat at 6.
Rubbish. In fact, and I figured this out, on a mathematical system, it is exactly as rubbish as Bride Wars. Because? It's not worse than Bride, because I was trying to figure out exactly how bad it was, and when I actually saw it, I thought, ooh, but I did a kind of figuring it, and it's exactly as bad as Bride Wars. It fails on exactly the same levels.
Carly in Vancouver, in Canada.
Yes.
Couples Retreat, the email title is, Couples Retreat would have been so much better if... Okay. Ellipsis, indeed. Dear plain old Simon and Mark, I had the pleasure... not sure if that's the right word, of watching Antichrist last night.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Without even seeing the awful Couples Retreat, I think I can safely say that it would have been top 10 of 2009 material if Vince Vaughn and co. had travelled to Von Trier's Eden instead.
Yes, that would have been very good.
That would have been
a very good idea.
Cirque de Freak is at 5. That's The Vampire's Assistant.
It's the vampire movie that you don't want around, but there are so many others you could go and see. You can go and see Thirst, which is very interesting. We've got the Twilight sequel coming out. I like Twiglet, and a lot of other people have written in and saying, you know, it's
rubbish. Forward to the new
you
one.
Liked it, didn't you?
Yeah, looking forward to the
but new although
one
you did
well.
Think that the lead actress was a little bit moany.
Oh, well, that was because based on the little speech that she did beforehand, which she was just incapable of stringing a sentence. Mind you, she's going to be a guest on the programme.
Exactly, fine. So we think she's
great, actually.
Yes. Let's not call her overweight either.
Really like.
Okay.
Apparently she isn't, so fine.
Fine.
But still looking forward to the follow-up. Saw 6 at 4.
I paid to go and do this to catch up on Saw 6 because it's one of the ones they didn't press screen. And can I tell you, the most fun I had was the moment at the ticket office when I said I'd like to buy a ticket to see Saw 6, and nothing in the film entertained me as much as that, despite the fact that the film, which is just torture in every sense, has a subtext, well, supertext, about American health insurance. So it's political grind, but it's just rubbish.
I suppose you could say, can I see Saw 6 and then change your mind to go and see An Education instead?
Yeah, no, but you'd have to do it alliteratively. If somebody can come up with a sentence that says, I want to see Saw 6 and then goes into something else, then please do.
Now, Fantastic Mr. Fox is at number 3.
You like it more than I do. You like it so much more than I do.
Philip Kennedy, BA, Art History and Fine Art. Dear Fox and Badger, being one of those typographically loving, well-dressed, Wes Anderson fan types who enjoys beautiful films that seem far more clever and funny than they probably are.
Yep.
It was with much enjoyment that I went to see Fantastic Mr. Fox last week. I felt it was a wonderfully warm-natured film with a gentle sense of pace that managed to be both stylish and charming. That said, I did question its appeal. Would you not heckle an email?
Not heckling.
That said,
correcting.
I did question its appeal for children. On the one hand, I do hope that there are plenty of children out there who do enjoy a Jarvis Cocker cameo and jokes about the existential nature of being a fox. But, on the other hand, if there are, I do sincerely worry about our future. Mm. It's just a shame, though, that children's films nearly always seem to have to carry universal appeal. Why is that? Can we not be happy to just let some of these children enjoy a simple farmyard cider with a gentle mix of dry humour tinged with a dark poignancy that's set to the music of Cat Stevens? Is that too much to ask? Angus Gannage Stewart, dear Beavis and Butthead, as a huge Wes Anderson fan, and after hearing The Good Doctor's review of Fantastic Mr. Fox on a recent podcast, I was rather disappointed. I hadn't seen it at this point, and so entered the cinema with low expectations.
Low. You did that like you went low expectations.
However, I thoroughly enjoyed the film throughout. I did enjoy with The Good Doctor that it will not appeal to many children, as there seem to be a few too many jokes only adults will get. But as it appealed to me as a 15-year-old, I wonder what Mark would have thought of the film if it was not directed at children. He was asked this question on the last podcast, however, he managed to dodge it quite
skillfully. No, I don't think it's a very good adults film either.
Well, we'll leave it there.
You're not dodging that at all.
Up is at number 2.
Which is, interesting and has a great opening. Some of the rest of the film fails to live up to the opening, but you don't need to see it in 3D. You can see it in 2D and you won't come out with a headache.
Ben Tuff in Shanghai. So he says...
We are truly international.
Fred and Ginger, I'm catching up on podcasts a little here, but even so, up. What happened? Has it only just opened in the UK in the last 2 weeks?
Yes.
We had this open legally in China weeks and weeks ago.
I know,
ago.
And in fact, it premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in, it must have been May, and at the time, everyone was saying, why are we going to have to wait so long for it?
To the opening segment, it must have been one of the most moving opening 10 minutes of any film I have seen in a very long time.
I would buy that.
It brought this grown man to tears, yeah. And that was watching it in a second language, Chinese, of which I understand very little, which brought me to thinking, whilst I agree the overall impact of Toy Story et al. May be better, the subtlety of the genuine human emotions that Pixar are now able to convey in digital form is truly magical. It goes beyond the magic of the fur on Sully in Monsters, Inc., and is that not the point? Pixar have moved so far beyond cartoons, in inverted commas, that they are challenging real, also in inverted commas, actors for the plaudits. Try watching it a second time and it's even harder. The emotions are in the expressions, the interactions of pixels. Incredible.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that. And I think that opening sequence, which is virtually silent anyway, it's not speech, it's all to do with the kind of the classic silent comedy tradition, which, funnily enough, Digimation has picked up on.
Michael Jackson's This Is It is the UK's number one.
And again, I paid to go and see it in a cinema. And of course, the weird thing about it is, it's not really a film. It's, you know, it's Kenny. The hero of this is Kenny Ortega. And it means that I can say I was completely right about High School Musical. Kenny Ortega is great. I mean, he is really, really a smart guy. And he has managed to put together this rehearsal footage to make it into a concert of Michael Jackson. And the interesting thing is, I mean, I don't like Michael Jackson at all, anything he's done for the last 10 years, but I, you know, obviously, like everybody else, when I was a kid I got Off the Wall and all those sort of things. And watching the thing, I thought, look, if Elvis had died and there was footage of Elvis rehearsing for the for the tour that he didn't do, I would want to see it. And watching it in the cinema, people were applauding as if they were watching concert footage. And funnily enough, there was something quite endearing about the fact that it's not the polished performance. I mean, he doesn't really sing most of the songs. He gets a few bit through, then he talks a little bit, and he keeps talking about protecting his voice. And you do think some of these songs are really great. I mean, Earth Song is terrible, and we really did need a Jarvis Cocker cameo when he started doing that.
Quite like Earth Song.
No, you don't.
I do quite
Lordy, lordy, that's unforgivable. You don't really quite like
Earth
Song.
I was there when Jarvis Cocker stormed the stage, and that was great fun.
Did you go, yes?
That was extremely entertaining.
How can you like that sanctimonious bilge? And in fact, one of the worst moments in the film.
I have a weakness for sanctimonious bilge. You must have realised that.
No,
by
but
now.
There's a bit, and then Michael Jackson, I love all the things in the world. I just want everyone to be nice to the planet. Meanwhile, he's doing this special effects movie that, you know, must have produced enough methane to flatten it. But he's busy, no, I just want everyone to be lovely to the trees. And there's a little girl running through all these forests. That is
David in London, just to get in early, I saw This Is It. I enjoyed it. I felt sad rather than creepy, as some commentators have said, watching in the knowledge that the show would never reach completion.
Yeah, I didn't think
I
it was
confess
creepy.
To being a fan, so seeing brief glimpses of Michael Jackson's work process were very interesting. However, his evident weight loss was a depressing sight. So many people put such huge effort into the show that they deserve to have at least got part of their craft aired.
Yes.
And I think that justifies the film. It would have been a great concert.
I don't think it's a film, but I think it's something interesting happening in the cinema in the same way as sporting matches.
Just a few moments from a long email from Alex, age 23, BA History, MSc Political Science. Dear Blanket and Bubbles, yesterday morning I went to see This Is It, or Michael Jackson like you've never seen him before, tagline, having won a ticket at my local multiplex. He's writing from Amsterdam, by the way. Having won a ticket at my local multiplex for the second viewing ever in the Netherlands, the premiere being the night before, I found myself for the first time in my life sitting in the theatre at 8 a.m. Yes, that's right. The prize was a ticket to an unusually early show of the film. The empty seats in front, behind, and to the left and right
Excellent.
Of me made me realise two things.
Experience.
Number one, Amsterdam has more bed than bad films. Two, that according to Mark's tips on how to enjoy There Will Be Blood, I would be in for the ultimate viewing of a film with a supposedly phenomenal soundtrack. Still, whilst watching This Is It, I felt great discomfort. This was not related to the time of day, nor to the smell of the people in the cinema. I clearly hadn't got round to having a morning shower. I felt uncomfortable from pure empathy. Whenever I ride the tube or the bus and I sit next to a senior citizen that has trouble breathing because of a lifetime of smoking, I can't help but feeling rather heavy and out of breath myself. Seeing Mr. Jackson, 50 years old, on stage, trying his best to sing and dance simultaneously, gave me that same troublesome feeling, especially when realising that his death was imminent. The footage of Mr. Jackson trying to push himself to perform worried me. Did he really have to go through with those?
But cases? I disagree. Funnily enough, the thing that I thought about the film was he looks in quite good, you know, in quite good health, considering that he was so close to his demise. He actually looks in surprisingly good health. And of course, that was the stuff they released, some of that footage when the news of his death had happened. The footage was released saying, no, hang on, he wasn't in bad shape at all. Look, here he was. And he's doing fine. I mean, certainly I've seen people in much worse shape, you know, do huge pop tours. I mean, heaven's sake, we've all seen, you know, rock stars in various states of distress or refreshment performing. You know, he seemed to be all right to me. I mean, I can't get over the stealth nose, the fact that, the, you know, the sort of the tiny little thing which isn't, you know, doesn't bear any relationship to any nose I've ever seen before. But I thought he looked fine on stage, actually.
Can you squeeze a mini reviewette before
into 15 seconds?
Well, how late can we be for the news? I forget.
You take your time.
Well, what are the rules now?
I think the rules are 2 minutes, but okay, yeah, I'm very flexible.
2 minutes and 10.
Okay, well, so very quickly, let me do The Fourth Kind, because I had to pay to see this, because they didn't, you know, they didn't preview screen it. And The Fourth Kind, it's Nigel Floyd, he's saying, I'm referring to this as a side of the bus movie, in that we only knew it was coming out because it's advertised on the side of the bus. And I said, he said, you can't use that phrase. I said, too late, we've already done it. We referred to it as a side of the bus movie on that basis that any movie advertised on the side of a bus can't be any good. Well, this is both of those two things. It is allegedly based on true stories of alien abduction. It purports, at the beginning, Mila Jovovich comes on and says, I am Mila Jovovich and I am going to be playing this real life character, and my scenes are all based on real things that are documented, and you are going to see on screen the original documentary evidence and me acting them. So the whole thing is saying, oh look, real, real, real. Now, as anyone who's been on the web will know, the question of whether any of this is real is, shall we say, at very best, open to question. Certainly none of it looked real to me, least of all the documentary footage. And if that is real documentary footage, I've never seen real people look so much like actors in my entire life. So the story is, oh, there's a bunch of people in a remote town, aliens come down, people disappear, people get abducted, people go mad, people get, you know, interviewed by psychiatrists who go, after, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're going to be asleep. But all you need to know is this. You remember that film by Whitley Strieber?
Remind me.
It wasn't called Ceremony, it was another word beginning with C, in which Whitley Strieber said, you know, oh, I was walking around and the aliens abducted me, because that's what aliens always do. They come down to Earth and abduct science fiction writers. They always do that. It's like L. Ron Hubbard, you know, Dianetics, let's go get a science fiction writer and tell him about the great religion. So in the case of Whitley Strieber, was it called? No, Communion it was called, in which I think it was Christopher Walken was abducted, and then he was probed and prodded and then sent back down and nobody believed him. Then we had Fire in the Sky, in which people were abducted and probed and sent back down and nobody believed them. And both of those movies were far superior to The Bilge, which is The Fourth Kind. I mean, I did find that when they did all the psychiatrist sequences, you're going to go to sleep, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I did. And then you'd wake up and go, somebody would be on a video screen going, aah! And then talking in Sumerian, right? Talking in Sumerian, going, ach, no, nit, ha,
that's German. How do you speak in Sumerian?
Like that.
But how would you know?
Because there's subtitles, and because they bring in a guy, right, who's the expert.
But the subtitles are English.
Yeah, no, hold on. They bring in a guy, right, whose whole USP is that he's the world's Sumerian expert, right? And he listens to people going, and he translates it as, I am God, you are people, I eat you for lunch, or, you know, and such like. And it goes on for 2 hours, and then it stops. And at the end of it, Mila Jovovich comes up to the screen and says, you can choose to believe or not. And I thought, Mila, I choose not.
I choose to burn you at the stake.
Yeah. She was mad in Joan of Arc, wasn't she? And yeah, that was the role that she was born to play.
A couple of things to say when you queue up for the movies. Dave in Fife, I'd like to see Saw 6 as I saw 4, but didn't see...
Don't try again.
I'd like to see Saw 6 as I saw 4, but didn't see Saw 5.
Very good. That would work. That's good.
Jason in Wisbeach. 6 to see Saw 6 at 7, please.
Very good. So
if there's any more fun to be had, let us know. You can send us a text. You can drop us an email, mayo@bbc.co.uk.
Can I tell you one last thing? The Fourth Kind, there is a moment in it in which the woman actually explains. She says, Close Encounter of the First Kind is this. We're all going, we know, we all saw Close Encounter of the Third Kind. It was the Close Encounter of the Fourth Kind, you don't have to actually, but that's how bad the film is. They actually explain to you what the Fourth Kind is.
Are you finished?
Abduction. Yes, I am finished.
What's coming next?
Bright Star. And Jennifer's Body.
Okay. Dear Josephine and Daphne, this is Holly Gage from Singapore. Simon, when deciding which film to go and see, because I can't tune in live, I often have to imagine a Lilliputian Dr. K is sat on my shoulder helping me out. This works
horrible
quite
thought.
Well. At District 9, I got that right. That was excellent. I really enjoyed Paris 36. I don't know what that one is. And would recommend that everyone go and see Mary and Max. However, I have a difficult choice this weekend. Can Dr. K please advise which of the following films, if any, I should go and see? So this is on in the local multiplex in Singapore.
Okay.
Vengeance, A father comes to Hong Kong to avenge his daughter, whose family was murdered. Officially, he's a French chef. Astro Boy. Do you know, have you seen that? No. Astro Boy, from the people who brought you TMNT. My girlfriend is an agent. Suji and Jai Jun were once a couple until Jai Jun couldn't take her lies anymore. And the final choice is Hump Day. But I can't tell you anything about that.
Yeah. Can I just say...
Which of those for Holly?
Well, I think Hump Day...
It doesn't really look... After the booze and the big talk run out, only one idea remains, and that's... Okay, so that's your choice, is it? That's your official recommendation?
That is my official recommendation.
Okay. Okay, for everyone not in Singapore, what can we go and see?
Bright Star is the new movie by Jane Campion, was also the centrepiece of the London Film Festival, about which you and I did a programme.
Very good programme.
I thought we were very good, thank you. So it's basically, it recounts the story of the love story of the love affair between John Keats, played by... Ben Whishaw, who I think is great. I mean, Ben Whishaw, I think I'm right in saying, was the youngest Hamlet the RSC ever had. He's been in things like Perfume, which is a very flawed movie, but he is really great. And I've seen him on stage in something just recently. He has a real sort of fragile, strange, poetic presence. I think he's a great actor. And Fanny Brawn, who is played by Abby Cornish, who I think I first saw in that movie Somersault, which I like very much. So two very fine actors. And in the movie, Abby Cornish's character, Fanny Brawn, is basically a kind of Vivian Westwood-style dress designer. She makes dresses, but she's got this incredible sort of, you know, new style of doing it. So he's a poet, so he you know, fashions words, but she's a dressmaker, so she fashions clothes. Now, the film is directed by Jane Campion, and it has been hailed as Jane Campion's best film since The Piano. Now,
yeah, well, that was dull.
Exactly. This is, in a way, the kind of the root of the problem. I think we have a clip which we're going to play. Let's play you a clip, and then let's get to grips with Bright Star. Here we go.
Mrs. Vaughan, may I speak to Fanny, please?
No, I will not speak to him.
Fanny, I was going to tell you. Fanny, I have no money. In fact, I am in debt. I must earn. I must write and make a living. If I fail, though I hate to think on it, then I must make way so another may marry and adore you as I wish to.
No! I will not be adored ever again by you or by anyone! I hate you!
Enough.
Okay, fine. So, doomed love story, okay? They're in love. He hasn't got any money. She hasn't got any money. He needs money. Things are going to be better. Moreover, he's not well. And as you know, from what you obviously know about the story of John Keats, his not-wellness didn't end very happily.
Don't spoil the ending.
No, it's just fine. It's the story of John Keats. You know how it ends. None of these stories end happily. So, look, here's right. For those watching, here is the poster, okay? This is the advert. And as you can see from this, it's kind of pastel shades, pastel orange, pastel purple. It's a woman sitting down, read Abby Cornish
sobbing
sitting. No, she's reading. She's not sobbing.
She's
reading,
about to cry. Though,
and the phrases that are picked out, you know, from the reviews that tell you how great the film are. And I pick these out. Things like ravishing, exquisite, elegant, and most damningly, I feel gorgeously shot. Which means, you know, if anyone says a film is gorgeously shot, it does mean
it's boring.
It does. Now here's the problem is this. Okay,
I suppose The Piano was gorgeously shot.
Yes, The Piano was gorgeously shot. It was so gorgeously shot. It gorgeously shot me to tears. Here's my key problem. There's a bad history of movies about writers and poets. Remember, there was a film about Sylvia Plath just quite recently, in which I think they weren't able to use any of Plath's poetry. And it's very hard having a poet sitting down. And you know, I always think of that Monty Python sketch. Remember, of the famous writer coming out to write his new novel,
Thomas Hardy.
That's right, and it's they're commentating, because the fact is, people writing, creating is not very cinematic. Now, in Jane Campion's defence, what she's done with this is she's centred, rather than on the writing, there is some reading of poetry, she's centred on this relationship between these two characters, which is, you know, a classic sort of tortured relationship. The problem is that, funnily enough, it's very much like many of the films that Campion has made before. I mean, it is that thing about female self-annihilation in bonnets, which is the thing that Jane Campion does. Now, my problem is this. I think that Jane Campion's best film is In the Cut, and that is clearly the one film that she made that was a false step that nobody else liked. It kind of didn't do Meg Ryan's career any favours. It was a modern erotic thriller which was edgy and, you know, actually would have been a straight-to-video erotic thriller directed by Jag Mundra had it not been the fact that it was picked up by Jane Campion.
Should I be aware of Jag Mundra?
Oh, yes, you should. Jag Mundra and Greg Dark. And yeah, I've spoken about him before in these... In this yeah. very studio, you obviously weren't listening. But basically, that's what it was. It was a sleazy exploitation movie with kind of A-list movie values. And I thought she did it rather well. Nobody else liked it. So she's gone right back to the classic stuff that she used to do, which is, as I said, female self-annihilation in bonnets. And she does it very well. But I don't know that it is as engaging as it needs to be. Firstly, even the glowing reviews say very little happens. And the fact is, very little does happen quite a lot. It happens gorgeously and ravishingly and exquisitely, but it is very little and it does happen quite a lot. Secondly, there is, for me, a detachment from the central relationship because I'm not completely won over by the doomed, you know, romantic ideal that I think you have to buy into in order to really get them. So what I end up doing is I end up watching the performances going, Abbie Cornish's performance is great, Ben Whishaw's performance is great, gosh, that's an interestingly backlit shot.
That's a nice bonnet. Haven't seen one lit like that before.
Yeah, don't think this is going to end well. How long have I got? And I'm sorry, I know that I sound like a total Philistine saying this, but the fact of the matter is that I thought Bright Star was, like, you know, some previous Jane Campion movies, but completely unlike In the Cut, it was admirable, but I have to say not engaging. And I am slightly concerned that the problem for me, because I found the piano such a crushingly boring movie, and since everybody else loves it so much, I mean, maybe I'm just out of step, but I tell you this, you mean you don't like the piano either, right?
No, I think it was as dull as you do.
Fine. You ain't going to love Bright Star.
I wasn't planning to queue up for it.
No. Saw 6, though.
Tim in battle. Can I ask the good doctor if he's seen Saw with Marjorie Daw? Outdated nursery rhyme reference.
Very good.
Dear Dyson and Hoover, this is William Lee. After much searching, my father recently managed to find and subject me to Oversexed Drug Suckers from Mars.
No! Somebody actually released it? That was the film even Colourbox wouldn't release.
And I have to say,
it's the worst film ever made.
It's not as certain as Mark suggested that it's the worst film ever made. Might I suggest Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter as a film which makes for truly embarrassing viewing.
Somebody else mentioned that recently on the Uncut blog. I haven't seen that. I should have a look at it. I like the title.
William, on this MSc, BSc, I have some very good news on the plights on humankind that is Transformers. Having attended the Lewis famous November the 5th celebration, you know, they always put
they burn an effigy of...
Okay.
It's always somebody famous.
Yeah, well, one of the Bonfire Societies had a replica of a Transformer, which they stuffed full of fireworks. It was most likely to be burnt to a crisp. He didn't personally witness that, but that's how it was being lined up. Maybe if someone was at the Lewis bonfire, they can confirm that it was a Transformer that was atop the bonfire.
Very good.
Well, I got some Megan Fox news before.
Megan Fox.
She doesn't talk like that.
No, but, you know, most of my impressions don't sound like the people they're meant to be.
No, but that was
conceptual.
Yes, but clearly that was
Megan Fox.
No, I don't think that's even close to Megan Fox.
Listen, we've had people writing in who've said that they've been in the cinema and she's walked on and they have felt compelled to go, Megan Fox.
She knows on the show on Monday.
Well, I know because you just pushed the thing down and said, so can I say?
Yeah, go on.
Chris Evans.
That'd be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but what was depressing was that you were looking at me and with that look and you pushed the button. You went, when's Chris Evans on the show? Like,
you're spoiling the radio magic for everybody. This from Anna. Doctors Elmo and Oscar the Grouch, happy birthday Sesame Street, able to confirm whether Hello David Morrissey is in fact on Twitter under, and then gives a particular Twitter-esque type address because we need the truth. He might be a very, very recent convert, but when he was in last, we did ask him, and I don't think he's up for any of this stuff.
There's somebody on Twitter who says they're Jason Isaacs, but I don't think they are. I don't think that is either.
Almost certainly not. So if there's someone on there claiming to be Dave Morrissey, my guess is, unless he gets in touch very quickly, that it's not. Assume that it isn't. So we say, by the way, Jimmy Carr was on the show on Wednesday and he wants to be added to the list. Anyway, he wants to be said hello to. Anyway.
Hello, Jimmy Carr. Jason Isaacs, even if you're not on Twitter.
And hello to Hugh Dennis, who is picking his kids up from school and we're trying to get him on the show. So, Hugh, get in touch. Thank you.
Okay.
S. Fry, M. Sheen and F. Convention. In that order.
Okay.
And anyone else who knows us.
Yes.
What else is new?
Jennifer's Body, which is the new movie from screenwriter Diablo Cody, who, of course, celebrated for writing Juno, which I liked very much. The story, it's a high school story, which involves vampirism, bloodletting, you know, ancient curses, supernatural goings-on. But the thing that you actually really have to make the leap of faith for is Megan Fox is a schoolgirl.
Shouldn't you assume the pose when you...
No, I can't, because I'm actually... Even I'm embarrassed about the fact that I did that several times, so even I'm going to let that go. And Amanda Seyfried is her dowdy friend. Well, the idea that, firstly, Megan Fox is a schoolgirl, A, and that Amanda Seyfried is dowdy. So if you can get over that, right, you can get over that. So the story is they're two friends, and Megan Fox is the sort of the one who's glamorous that everybody, you know, fancies, but she's evil. But she's not evil in a high school way. She's really evil. Now, I'm going to play you a clip, which I haven't heard yet, because whilst I would normally have been listening to the clips, I was in a cinema watching The Fourth Kind, because they wouldn't... Because I had to, because they wouldn't...
We might have the wrong bit.
Well, we might have. Let's see what happens.
Demonic transference. It's something that happens when you try to sacrifice a virgin to Satan without using an actual virgin. The guys in the band tried to sacrifice her in the woods, but what they didn't know is that she hasn't been a virgin since junior high. It all makes sense now. Read this. If the human sacrifice is impure, the result may still be attained, but the demon will forever reside in the soul of the victim. She must forever feed on flesh to sustain the demon.
Okay.
She's eating boys. They, like, make her really... pretty and glowy, and her hair looks amazing. And then when she's hungry, she's weak and cranky and ugly. I mean, like, ugly for her. Don't you get it? The dance. It'll be like an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Now, the thing is, there are two traditions that this is drawing, and one of them is those sort of teen girl movies like Mean Girls and, you know, that. On the other hand, there's the horror movie. It is clear that Diablo Cody is a big horror film fan, and she has seen, you know, and enjoyed all the horror films that we're making references to. So it's Slumber Party Massacre, Happy Birthday to Me, Carrie, Prom Night. Clearly, I think the biggest influence here is that film Ginger Snaps, which we talked about on the screening rooms thing the other week, which is a very, very interesting Canadian horror movie. It's that classic hormonal time of the month kind of movie, in which the whole film about it is it's a film about, you know, teenage rage exploding in a way which is not Luna related. And I think it's a very interesting, you know, very well done film. This owes
which
a lot to
teenage rage is Luna related then?
Well, being a werewolf.
Yeah,
because what I'm saying is that it's to do with bodily cycles rather than lunar cycles, and that's something which is referred to here as well. I think there is an emergent subgenre which is called hormonal horror. No, there is. Because I didn't... That's not...
So if you're going to your local video store, yeah, there'll be sci-fi, there'll be drama, there'll be TV box sets,
and there'll be hormonal horror. Well, I'm saying it to me because I didn't make that phrase up. I mean, I was talking to Nigel the other day, and he said, oh, it's hormonal
Nigel.
Horror. Floyd, who was on the programme with Floyd and Boyd. One half of Floyd and Boyd referred to it as hormonal horror, and he's quite right. And he also, same as me, so said that the Ginger Snaps is what's in the back of this. Now, it's a really strange thing because I read a piece in the Guardian Guide last week in which they interviewed Diablo Cody, and the whole of the interview was about how there's been a backlash against her since the success of Juno, which surprised me. Because I thought that generally people would rather like Jennifer's Body. The good stuff about it is this. I think that Amanda Seyfried is really, really good. I think it's the best thing Megan Fox has ever done and may well be the best thing Megan Fox will ever do. I think that Diablo Cody understands her horror references. I mean, as you know from Juno, there's the long conversation about whether or not Dario Argento is more hardcore horror than Herschel Gordon Lewis. So, I mean, we know that she has her feet in the right area. And she's clearly a fan. And that's great. And that's fine. So you feel like you're in the hands of somebody who's done their homework, who's lived this kind of life, who knows them. Also, I like the idea of taking the high school warring girls thing and turning it into something which is supernatural, but doing it in a way which is funny, because it is actually a borderline horror comedy. And in a way, if it has a shortcoming, it's that it's not scary enough for me. And I think that an awful lot of horror fans will find the stuff that's meant to be scary not scary enough. It'll probably be more scary.
Maybe it's for normal people.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. So, funnily enough, I think that its success may be that it will play to the less geeky audience than me, rather better. That said, I think it's well written and fun, and it's a good romp, and I did enjoy it. There is apparently already talk of a preferred director's cut, which I wait to see. I think that as Diablo Cody grows as a screenwriter, she will become less self-conscious about her writing, because I think occasionally she's in danger of becoming the female Quentin Tarantino, of writing dialogue that sounds like Diablo Cody dialogue as opposed to sounds like the characters. But that's a very small failing in somebody. This is only the second of her screenplays that I've seen, and clearly Juno is a very witty, very funny screenplay. And when people said about Juno, teenagers don't talk like that, you know what, it's a movie, it's meant to be entertaining. I think she's a good writer, I think she knows her horror, I think this is not without problems, but it's an enjoyable romp and its heart's in the right place.
Debbie Williams saying on this, me and my girlfriend saw Jennifer's Body on Halloween night and we were delighted that amongst the naffness of Saw films and remakes, there's finally a film that was for us, not the critics who seem to have stamped all over it.
The critics have stamped all over it.
This one was for me. Amanda Seyfried is wonderful, and being on the fence with Megan Fox, she's won me over.
This is the best thing she's done. Definitely the best thing she's done.
Is it Christmas time?
It is Christmas time.
Before Mistletoe and Wine.
Yes. Children singing. Christian Rhyme, which does, let's face it, does
no
not scan.
It doesn't really work.
Sorry, Cliff.
Let's just have a look. We've got an email here from Paul saying, "Dear Ebenezer Kermode and Simon Cratchit, can anyone please explain to me why the Robert Zemeckis Christmas Carol is being released on the first weekend in November?
Yeah, I know.
I work in a supermarket, and so I've had to deal with Christmas products since the end of August, but why is the quintessential Christmas story being released so early? What's most annoying is that I'll probably go and see it this week, as there is absolutely nothing worth seeing out at all right now, including the extraordinarily disappointing Jennifer's Body, which I saw when shown on Halloween night. An incredibly unfunny and unscary horror comedy." Robert Zemeckis' Christmas Carol. This will be our friend Mr. Carey.
It will, and I'm going to try. I'm not going to play a clip because I want to get through two films in the next 4 minutes. Christmas Carol is the big digimation. It's yet another version of Christmas Carol, and like Polar Express, it's basically taking a famous book. I mean, obviously Christmas Carol is rather more famous. Doing it in a digimation style, in which what you get is an actor doing the mocap stuff. So you remember Tom Hanks did all the major parts in Christmas Carol. Jim Carrey does the central role of Scrooge, both young and old, and also does he mocaps the ghosts of Christmas past, present and future.
Motion capture,
yes. And then Gary Oldman does both Bob Cratchit, and I think he's also doing Tiny Tim. So it's very, people are taking various roles. All that's irrelevant when you come to watching the movie. Okay, you're watching the movie. It's a motion capture digimation, which is available in 3D. No point in it being in 3D. Don't need 3D. Total waste of time. Let's all just get over that. The thing with it is this. When people do these sort of stories, and exactly the same with Polar Express, it's like they have to turn it into a roller coaster ride. So, on the good side with Christmas Carol, the stuff which is good about it is that it is possible to do very good sort of Dickensian streets. I mean, there's a touch of design about it which is gothic and Hammer-esque, and there are moments when I'm watching it when it's kind of the smog-filled streets and the, backlit murky shadows, in which I think, if somebody did a serious horror film like this with this digimation technique, I would actually be very interested in it, because there is some beautiful design. That's the good stuff. The bad stuff is that every 5 minutes there has to be a rocket chase. So imagine Dickens sitting down and reading it out, if it had, and then Scrooge caught hold of the candle snuffer, which turned into a spaceship and flew up into space, and then it ran out of fuel just as it was turning around and burning up on re-entry, and he then fell 50,000 feet, and everyone would go, "What? Get back to the thing about Tiny Tim and the thing, stop doing all that stuff." So I'm sitting there, like the authentic audience, going, "Can we stop doing the roller coaster ride thing and have the stuff?" Because I am representing the authentic Dickensian audience, saying, "You know what? Forget all the running around, and can we just have the story?" And the problem for me is that, to some extent, the story gets lost amidst all the running around. It's not terrible. It's just not very interesting. It's quite long and boring. And it reminded me, again with Beowulf, that when you get to photorealist motion capture digimation stuff, you do start to think it's some of the faces are so close to being faces that they look a bit weird and creepy because they're so close. It's not, it's somewhere between anime. And funnily enough, the character that Gary Oldman plays is classic of somewhere between real and unreal, which is, I find a little bit odd sometimes.
Minute and a half.
Very quickly, there is a film out called Henri-Georges Clouzot's Inferno. I'm going to mention it because it's film of the week. It is a story about Clouzot attempting to make this film called Inferno. He's a very famous director. He made Wages of Fear, and he was accused by the avant-garde, by the Nouvelle Vague, of being an old-fashioned filmmaker. So he embarked upon this film Inferno, which is a film about jealousy, and essentially he was given unlimited resources. He went off to a hotel to make a film about jealousy. He spent ages and ages doing test footage of faces with demonic shadows and doing reverse colour things so that a lake would go red, but you had to paint the whole of the rest of the world blue in order that it looked normal. And it's a very interesting documentary about somebody pursuing a vision and basically going nuts during the pursuit of it. And of course, the actors end up walking off, the director ends up collapsing. There are many films about directors trying to get their great vision made. I mean, you think, for example, of Lost in La Mancha, but the Inferno film is very, very good, and I would advise you to see it if you get a chance, but it's probably only playing in a very few places.
And our final piece of Saw correspondence,
yes,
from Paul in Southend-on-Sea, who just says, "I saw Saw 4 by the seashore." which is probably the end of that, unless you can think of more entertaining things, in which case we'll include them on next week's programme.
Yes.
Mark, thank you very much. We also spoke to John Ronson, the author of The Men Who Stare at Goats, about the movie. Mark gave his review. Mark Kermode is here. We have some movies to discuss. The Men Who Stare at Goats is one of the releases. It's based on John Ronson's book. John is here. You can follow him on Twitter. Are you still doing that?
I am.
Where can we find you?
I'm at John Ronson. No H in John. I dropped out for a little while, like Stephen Fry, but no one, you know, because I thought it was getting a bit mean, but no one noticed, so I just came back again.
That's rather sad, isn't it? Really?
Yes.
Okay, let's play a clip from the movie, then we can discuss. Well, that would be a good time to sort of roll
into
it.
That would be a very good time. Well done. No, made that seem seamless.
We talked about it for half an hour without playing a clip.
Yeah.
So here's the aforementioned Ewan McGregor and George Clooney.
It's just hard to believe the Pentagon paid for this. There's nothing in here actually about fighting.
New Earth Army was tasked with preventing conflict. We're a force of peace, not war. Bill understood if you wanted to change the world, you're going to start by changing the armies. He was the guy that started the research into non-lethals.
Non-lethals.
Check this out. The Predator.
The Predator? Lynn, that's just a plastic...
See? You're mine now. The Predator is 100% biodegradable, it's friendly to the Earth, and it can hurt you in 100 ways. It has warrior capacities, and it looks a little bit funny.
Jesus, stop it!
Funny thing is, you could see this just laying around on the ground, and you would never know that it has such lethality. Eyeballs.
Just explain this torture weapon which is being used there, John.
The Predator is like this kind of blob of plastic invented by a guy called Pete Brusso, who's like a kind of maestro of violence at Camp Pendleton. He trains the 82nd Airborne. And it's a blob of plastic where every edge is kind of ergonomically designed to wreak havoc on your chakra points. So, you know, up your nose and in your...
Where are your chakra points? I mean, James Bond film using torture on various... chakra points.
Yeah, I'm not certain where you're.
Stephen Graham's joined us. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
Do you know them?
I think you've got seven.
Right.
I think.
And they are?
Surely one's in your
head, chest, groin, obviously. And I can't remember the rest.
That's just like most of the main places, isn't it? Right, you know. Just hit something. That does have almost the best line in the film. He says it has deadly capability and it looks a bit funny. Yeah.
Which, by the way, that entire conversation is word for word a conversation I had with Pete Brusso 5 years earlier.
And is that really one of the strangest things about having, you know, having written this factual book, which then becomes a sort of factual but also an entertainment piece of fiction, that you've written down the transcript of an interview, word for word, between you and these people, and then all of a sudden it is being reenacted by George Clooney and Ewan McGregor?
It's really odd. But you adapt, you know, it's kind of surprising how quickly you adapt to your new circumstances, where it sort of becomes normal. And I suppose the reason why is, you know, if you don't adapt to your new circumstances, you kind of wake up in the morning and you go kind of, which is what I was doing at first, this kind of just panic and anxiety about being in, you know, this kind of weird new world. But then you do adapt. After a couple of days, you sort of think, "Well, this is all normal." George Clooney recreating a conversation I had.
So, who's the target for this film? Do you think?
Will it be the target audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, will it be, you know, put it this way: if it's just the Clooney, Spacey, Jeff Bridges, Ewan McGregor fans, that's quite a sizable number of people.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that what they've attempted to do, and John's talked about this to some extent, is to take a book which, I mean, I'm as you know, a big fan of John's, and we've known each other for many years. We used to work together at City Life in Manchester a long, long time ago, and I think that the investigative stuff that John has done is great. I think what they've tried to do with the film is to mainstreamize it as much as possible, for very good reasons, because films cost a lot of money. They have to open them up to a bigger audience. So what they've done is to take all those strange little stories that John's come across, and then put in the center of it a kind of buddy road movie, which is entirely sort of invented, because that stuff didn't really happen. So inevitably, all the stuff that I like tends to be all the widgety stuff, all the funny stuff, like exactly that scene with him demonstrating how that bit of plastic has deadly capability but looks a bit funny. And the stuff which I'm less fond of is the you know, characters going on a journey, because in a way that seems to me to be playing to the mainstream ones. But I understand why it's there. And I think I think, to its credit, it's not a graceless job of doing that. I mean, essentially, you're taking, you know, a camel and turning it into a horse, and I kind of really like the camel, but I did enjoy the movie. I laughed, and the most important thing was that, for me, I laughed. I found it funny. Yeah. And I think, in a way, that's kind of the thing you judge. It either entertains you or it doesn't.
You've got the five-laugh rule, right?
I have, yeah. No, it broke the five-laugh rule quite early on. I mean, just in the scene with the Predator, there was at least three laughs. So, no, it is funny, and there is... I mean, I think Clooney is a very watchable screen presence. Funnily enough, I mean... To be, you know, Bridges, Jeff Bridges can literally walk on screen with the exception of Big Lebowski, and I will just be happy anyway. Yeah. So even as part of me is thinking, you know, what I want is more of the John Ronson stuff. In fact, funnily enough, there is quite a lot of you in it, and there is quite surprising how much of the odd stuff they managed to get around what is essentially a mainstream buddy road movie.
I was surprised at how much from a book was in there, actually, because I kind of kept away from the whole process. I'd forgotten by the time I saw the film. I was, you know, at least 60 or 70% of the movies in my book, I'd say. Yeah.
Hello, me again. To watch my latest reviews, take a trip to www.bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode for the Kermode Uncut blog.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live